if you have a Bible, come over to 2 Samuel. I mean, 1 Samuel, I'm sorry. 1 Samuel. And I'm going to be talking about one person over here in 1 Samuel 1 and 2, but mostly 2. And I'm going to be talking about Hannah. And Hannah's probably one of my, I want to say favorite characters in the Bible, but she's definitely in the top 5. And Hannah's got one thing about her that I like to study, and I kind of like to look at, and just like in people, but also in people in the Bible and stuff like that. But Hannah has a no-quit attitude. And you can see that in chapter 1, and, you know, kind of going through it, and you can see it a little bit in chapter 2 also. But before I get into the meat of what I'm going to talk about, I'll just talk about Hannah in chapter 1 a little bit. And if you guys don't know the story of Hannah, basically what's going on with her is she's kind of in a tough situation. She's basically married to this guy called Elkanah, and he's got 2 wives. He's got Hannah, and then he's got his other wife, Peninnah. And Peninnah has kids. Peninnah has, 3 or 4 kids and stuff like that. And basically, this is a family that basically, every year they go up to, I think it says a mountain. I don't remember the name of the mountain, but they go up basically to worship God. So this is a family that's involved in ministry, and they're doing what's right. But there's one problem, and it kind of grieves Hannah quite a bit. Hannah doesn't have any kids. Peninnah does have kids. She can serve the Lord with these kids. She can make sure that they're doing what's right, and make sure that they're going to Sunday school, and they're probably given devotions, and she can say her prayers with these kids at night and stuff like that. But Hannah can't do that. Hannah has to sit back and just kind of watch for years and years and years as Peninnah actually does this. And so, as you read through chapter 1, I'm not going to read it, but as you read through chapter 1, you can kind of see that Hannah gets pretty bitter and pretty upset at her situation and, the cards that she's been dealt. It even says down in here that as they're going up to, every year to go up and worship and stuff like that, in verse 6 it says, "And her adversary also provoked her sore for to make her fret because the Lord had shut up her womb." So even right here, she's living with her adversary. I mean, some of our adversaries might be at work or at school or, somewhere else. She literally lives every single day with the woman who kind of makes, I mean, honestly, she just makes fun of her and gives her a hard time because she can't have kids and that's all she wants. And it says in verse 7, "And as he did so year by year," talking about her husband, "when she went up to the house of the Lord, she provoked her therefore, and she wept and did not eat." So years and years and years of this ended up happening. For years and years at a time, they actually went up to worship God to, do what was right and stuff like that. And while this family was supposed to be doing the right thing, Peninnah is giving Hannah a hard time, and she's making her super depressed. She's weeping all the time. She's not eating. She's not acting like how she's supposed to be. And through all this stuff, I don't really know how many years this happened. The Bible only tells me, "and as he did so year by year." But through all this stuff, Hannah at any point could have just been like, "I don't need this. This isn't, I don't care. I can go off and do whatever I want. We only come up here once a year anyway. This lady gives me a hard time every single day that I live with her and stuff like that. I'm not doing this. There's no point to this." But she didn't. Hannah had a no-quit attitude, and she kept coming to the Lord and asking her to give her a child. And, you read down through there and stuff like that, and she vows a vow to God, and then he ends up giving her a child and stuff like that. But in chapter 1, she's very, like I said, she's very bitter, she's very upset. It comes down at one point, trying to find the verse. I know it's over here. Basically, she says that it's in verse 10. She says that she's in bitterness of the soul. She's so upset about the situation she's dealing with and the fact that she can't give anything back to God that she's got bitterness in her soul. Over in verses 13 down to 15, Eli basically, they're up worshiping, and Eli thinks she's drunk. She's so extremely upset and burdened over what she can't give back to God and the fact that she doesn't have anything to give him. They actually think she's drunk because she's sitting there just praying and crying and stuff like that, and she's not acting right. And her response to that is she tells him that she's just a woman of sorrowful spirit and that she has poured her soul out before the Lord. So she's really, really upset about what's going on. And then if you know the story at all, obviously God ends up giving her what she asked for, and she gives it back to God. And she's a perfect example about, if you want something from God, then you got to give it back. But that's just a summary of chapter 1. And what I'm going to talk about is 1 Samuel chapter 2. And I'm going to be talking about Hannah's rejoicement prayer. And Hannah in chapter 2 is a totally different Hannah than what you can see in chapter 1. Chapter 1, like I said, she's very grieved. She's very, sorrowful in spirit. She's very bitter. She's got a lot of problems going on. But in chapter 2, right off the bat, she's extremely happy and she's extremely blessed and she's extremely rejoiceful. She's a totally different person in chapter 2. And I'll be honest, reading through this and putting this thing together, it's quite convicting going through this and reading this. And I'll kind of, hopefully that'll make itself known as I'm going through this. But I'm just going to talk about two things in two different verses, and just kind of hopefully not necessarily convicting, but almost like as an encouragement, or makes you kind of think about, you know, how you act whenever God gives you something. Whenever you've been asking God for something for so long, or however it's been, when He finally gives it to you, how do you respond to it? So the first verse I want to look at is in verse 1. In verse 1 of chapter 2 says this. It says, "And Hannah prayed and said, My heart rejoiceth, oh man, you guys know what it says, in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth is enlarged over mine enemies, because I rejoice in thy salvation." So the first thing I want to talk about in verse 1 is it says, "And Hannah prayed." And I'm not going to get any farther than that. You know, I kind of got to thinking, I was reading through this, and honestly, like, when I was picking the verses I wanted to do, I'd pick verse 1, and I was going to go on and talk about, you know, her mouth is enlarged over her enemies and all this other stuff. And I couldn't get past those first three words. It says, "And Hannah prayed." I began to kind of think to myself, I was wondering, you know, what exactly, the last time I really, really wanted something, the last time I really, really wanted something from God, or I was, I mean, let's say I was reading my Bible, and I was really just, like, trying to get something out of it. You know those days, you know, you wake up, and your brain's just not all there, and you know, it's almost like you're just, and you got to start reading it over again, and it just becomes, you know, it's just, it sucks sometimes because you're trying to get your brain focused, and you just sit there and you ask God, you're like, "Hey, give me something from this. I didn't take the time in my morning or my night or something like that to sit down and not get anything from this. Give me something." How do you react whenever He finally does give that to you? That's what I begin to kind of think about. You know, do you take whatever, and you know, whatever it may be, a new job, you know, maybe a friendship with somebody, a relationship, something from the Bible, whatever. Do you take what you've been asking Him for, I don't know, like weeks, days, months, possibly years, like Hannah was here? Do you take what He's been at, what you've been asking for, and when He finally gives it to you, when He finally hands it to you, do you go off and play with it and do your own thing, and then have to be reminded later on to come back and thank Him for it? I kind of got to thinking, Cody's birthday was a week ago, and I was thinking to myself, if you guys don't know, he's not here, but Cody's my brother. And I didn't get him anything for his birthday, so don't feel bad for him. But I was thinking to myself, if I were to get Cody a gift that he may have, like, really wanted, I don't know what it would have been, but if he really wanted something, I were to give it to him, and the moment he unwrapped it, if he didn't look at me, if he didn't smile at me, if he didn't thank, I mean, I'm not a person who's going to get upset if you don't thank me. I understand. Like, if you wanted it, go play with it. I don't care. But, you know, if he opened the thing and he didn't even acknowledge that I was in the room or that I had given it to him stuff, that would hurt a little bit. And I kind of got to thinking, you know, maybe that's how God feels sometimes. Then I got to thinking, you know, we've all probably been at a little kid's birthday party, right? You know, those little kids who really, really want something, you know, I don't know. The only kid I can think of is Brady. You know, Brady, like, wanting some type of lightsaber or something like that. But, you know, you ever seen them, they open up that gift that they really want, and man, like, everything in their body just goes insane, man. Like, they just start shaking, you know, all the excitement comes in and stuff like that. And usually, what do? They open it up, they demand somebody to get it out of the package that they have, and then they go off and they just start playing. They just start playing like crazy with it, and they don't pay attention to who gave it to them. They don't pay attention, you know, how much the person might have paid to get it for them. They just go off and play with it. And then what usually happens, you know, I know what happened to me. I go off and do my thing, and then my mom would grab me and say, "Hey, you know, Justin got you that. Go over and say thank you." And every single time, I don't know if this is how I look, but I imagine this is probably how I looked. Hey, be quiet down there. And so I imagine this is probably how I looked. I probably rolled my eyes, I probably sighed, and I probably walked over and I did one of these stupid, like, thank you type of things. And I went back and played with my stuff, right? We've all been there. We've all seen a kid act like that. And I got to thinking, and I was reading this thing, and it says over there that Hannah prayed. And I got to be thinking, man, how many times, I can't speak for you, but I definitely can for me, how many times have I asked God for, I don't know, months, years, you know, days for something, anything. I don't know what it is, but I've asked Him for something. And then finally, for whatever reason, He just decides to give it to me. He says, "Okay, you know, you've asked for it enough. Here you go. I'll give it to you. Sure, you want it. There you go." How many times have I open that thing up, and I just go off and play with it, and it takes maybe a month, maybe a year. I don't know how long it takes, but it takes, you know, several, you know, months or a certain amount of time. And then I have to come to, you know, prayer group one day, or I have to come down to a Thursday night or a Sunday morning, and I have to hear Bob tell me about how I need to be thankful for what God's given me. And you know what I do half the time? Instead of really getting upset over that thing and just, you know, dropping down in prayer immediately and, you know, apologizing for the fact that I just totally neglected what He gave me and I didn't need it in the first place, you know what I do? I roll my stupid eyes, I sigh my stupid little sigh, and I walk over to God and I give Him those two little pats and I say, "Thanks, Lord." And then I go back and I go play with it. That's a lot how we are a lot of times. I would think about that. I really would. I would think about that. It says in Hannah prayed. The moment she got something she'd been asking for years, she went ahead and decided to pray before she did anything else and thank God for what He gave her. I mean, honestly, if you're saved, you might as well at least think about it every day, but every single day you should at least thank God for the salvation that you have. You didn't deserve it at all. I mean, it's something, I mean, honestly, it's something that you should thank God for, you know, 20 times a day, if not more. I mean, you didn't deserve it at all. You don't know what we can't even comprehend as human beings what he went through to give it to you. But half the time, you know, Bob will talk about salvation and how you ought to be thankful for it, and half the time we just roll our eyes and sigh our sigh and go on with what we're doing. You better be thankful for what he's done for you. And you better, you better consider that every single day. And the fact that we got to be reminded for it every day, not just salvation, but I mean simple things like walking, your ability to walk, your ability to see, you know, hear, the fact that you don't have cancer, you know, the fact that, you know, you're in good health and you can do all this stuff, the fact that you got to be reminded for that every single day is just simply sad. It's sad. And we act like just like that little child at a birthday party who just decides to go off and just do our own thing, and we don't even have the audacity to thank God for what he gave you when he didn't have to give it to you in the first place. And then the second verse, and the second thing I'm going to be talking about is found in verse 3. And verse 3 says this. It says, "Talk no more exceeding proudly. Let not arrogancy come out of your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed." And I kind of got to thinking, I was thinking, you know, the only way that you truly ever get to a spot in your life where everything, including the fact that, you know, you're in good health, everything in your life, the only truly way that you get to a spot where you thank God for everything that you have and everything that he's given you for no reason at all is you can't be arrogant. You can't have any type of pride in your life. You know, one thing that thanking God will do is it'll basically remind you that you're absolutely nothing and you can't do anything without him. You physically cannot do anything without him. You won't be able to talk about yourself anymore. You won't be able to say that you did this or you did that anymore. There's no way you can do it, because the moment you go back, okay, well, oh yeah, I preached a really good message. Or you know, something else. Oh, I ran a really good race in school or whatever, you know, in track or something like that. Well, you wouldn't be able to do that if God didn't give you a voice, if you couldn't walk. You know, literally, you can't do anything in life and pride yourself on it if you're not thanking God 24/7 for the fact that, you know, he gave you the ability to do that stuff. I had a girl my first semester of college. I was having some troubles with my books because I was procrastinating, and I got them like the day of. And so I was in the bookstore, and I was having problems with it, obviously. I mean, like, I knew I was going to have problems. And so they're like, all these people are running around, because there's like thousands of other kids doing the same thing I did. And so they're running around, they're trying to figure stuff out. And there's one girl, and she was in my speech class too. And this one girl, and she's on the phone with her mom, and I'm on the phone with mine trying to get this whole thing figured out, right? And this girl is cussing her mom out. I mean, this girl's my age. I mean, she's dropping the F-bomb on her mom, she's dropping this, she's dropping that. And I'm sitting here, I was like, I wasn't scared, but I was very uncomfortable. I was just like, I could not imagine, I mean, imagine your kid talking to you like that, man, like almost like you're a dog or something. So she's going off on her mom, she's going off at the workers and all this other stuff. Then we got in class later on, she had like one of those Monster energy drinks, and she put it down on our table, and it fell over. I mean, not a big spill, it was a few drops or something like that, it just fell over. And all she needed to do was be an adult about it, get up, get some napkins or something like that, clean it up, and then that was the end of it. I mean, nobody even looked up. Everybody's on their phone anyway, waiting for the professor to get there. Nobody cares. And she just, I mean, in a dead silent room, just starts cussing, just starts going off, talking about, I don't deserve this. You know, why do bad things happen to good people? This girl who's literally sitting here cussing out her drink right now that you can't even hear. I mean, she's just going off. She's having a ball, you know. And I remember towards the end of the semester, she ended up dropping the class. And it's pretty hard to drop speech, honestly. Like, I don't understand how you come to do that, but she did. But later on, at the very end of the class, I was in a group project with a guy and another girl. And I don't even know how it came up in conversation. But this girl randomly, she's like, "Do you remember that girl who spilled that monster that one day in class?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I do." I was like, "That was funny that one day, man. She was going off and stuff." And she's like, "Man, you know what I really just never liked about that girl?" And I was like, "What?" No, I didn't say anything about it. She's like, "That girl was so arrogant." She's like, she really thought the world owed her something. When she was going off on her mom, when she was doing this, when she was doing that, she's like, that girl was really arrogant. And I got to thinking about that, and I was thinking, man, for one, even unsaved people, man, they notice arrogancy. Don't think they don't. They don't let that stuff just pass by. They notice arrogancy. But more importantly for you and me, if you're a Christian, people can't see Christ through an arrogant Christian. They can't see Christ through arrogant people. The only thing that they see when they look at you, if you think that, you know, the world owes you something, that you're the only one that, you know, is, you know, keeping you standing up, or you're the only one that's, you know, causing you to do everything in life, is you're just straying somebody away from Christ. They're not able to see you. If you every single day, you know, if somebody says something, you know, they congrats you on you know, on whatever you do or whatever, and you just give all that honor and glory to God, they will not see you even a little bit. They're not going to remember that race that you ran, or, you know, they're not going to remember whatever sermon you gave or something like that. They're going to remember that you know, at the end of it, you gave God the honor and glory for the whole thing. So, bottom line is that people can't see arrogant, people can't see Christ through arrogancy and through arrogant Christians. So think about that for a while. You know, are you thankful for one, for what God's given you, you know, whatever it may be, or do you have to be reminded, you know, every time he does give you something just to thank him for it? Or do you just let it pass by, you know, and you forget about it and, you know, you just go on with your daily life and play with your toys and have to wait till Bob or somebody else reminds you that you ought to thank him for it? So, hope you guys got a blessing out of it, and I'll go ahead and give it to Alex. So.